Greetings, Wargamers. We're your hosts, Trevor,
Jay,
Josh,
and this is
Shane Attack.
Is sponsored by Discount Games Incorporated. Discount Games Incorporated offers the maximum discount on Privateer Press products. When you order $30 or more, you will receive free or reduced shipping. You can find the web store at www.discountgamesinc.com. Welcome to a Thanksgiving edition of Chain Attack. I'm your host, Trevor, and I play Dinosaur Island, among other things.
I'm Jay, and I play Pandemic Legacy.
And I'm Josh, and I burn my brain at games like Antiquity.
So this is releasing on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, so
we're... And I feel a little...
ungrateful?
No, like... Something is wrong in the universe. I'm pretty sure, Josh, you're going to be at Disneyland and I'm not.
You're right. Oh my! Are we in the Negaverse on accident?
This is the worst thing ever.
Yeah, didn't you just get back from there, though?
I'll
be following your spoor throughout the park, essentially. I've tracked him to this location.
It's been about a week and a half at this point, so...
Oh, it's probably... The trail's grown cold.
Yeah, Brian's already telling me how much he misses Disneyland.
Well, you know, we're still shopping for the Anaheim house for Brian to be able to rent.
Anyway, oh, good, so. good.
No worries there.
So
are there no news, are there news and announcements during Thanksgiving?
I mean, it's Black Friday tomorrow, right?
It is.
I'm such a terrible American. I just never get up for Black Friday.
Whoa. That makes you a great American, sir.
The current plan is that we're going to have our Muzon Minis stuff on sale at 25% off.
Really?
Usually we sell Muzon Minis at full retail.
Including the MoveLine Pro Plus Power Sticks.
Indeed.
Did I add enough P's to the title?
They're very pretty. the plan is that that's going to be active on Black Friday through Cyber Monday, although our order from Muse probably isn't going to arrive before then, so not going to have huge inventories. Get what you can while hit the start if you're interested. Another announcement for Discount Games Inc. is that some of you are probably aware of there's a miniatures game that was a Kickstarter that was done by some War Machine players in Australia called Judgment. It's some larger scale, I think maybe 54 millimeter models, that it replicates a game that is a miniatures game that is a MOBA. And we're going to be the first company to have it in stock in North America.
Very cool.
It should be in stock shortly after this podcast goes live. They were out of stock of a few of their minis, and so it's not the entire product line, but a couple weeks after the launch, we are receiving them. We're going to be getting another wave of them, so, and that should have the entire line. So check out some Judgment.
It's very exciting.
And we already touched a little bit on Muzon Minis, but Josh, you guys just went to Board Game Geek. How did Muzon Minis products help you there?
Well, I will say that I do own several Muzon Minis products, including their token sets for the Grimkin, which are so cool because they have half-eaten apples as the Fury tokens, and the MoveLine 6. And I was able to stay up until at least 4 in the morning on more than one occasion. And on at least one occasion, crushed Trevor at a game that neither of us had any idea what we were doing in.
I'm pretty sure that I also own Muzon Minis products, and I was up at the same times you were playing the same games. It is crazy how that works.
What a coincidence. Thank you, Muzon Minis products.
So if you are a subscriber to the dojo, you'll have a free drawing for some Muzon Minis products. If you are a new subscriber, you'll be in a second drawing. So thank you, Dojo subscribers.
You are the best.
Okay, so Trevor.
Yes.
This episode is your creation. And
the spirit of gratitude has infested Trevor.
Whoa.
I'm always grateful for the things that I have. So we're not going to talk about War Machine this week. We're going to talk about board games. It's that time of year. We've in the past had kind of a holiday episode. This happens to be our one of probably three or four that we'll do.
So is this like a shopping guide? Is that part of what this?
I think we are going to do a shopping guide. Josh and I went to Board Game Geek Con over the weekend. And we played some unreleased board games.
Did not invite me, I would notice.
You're invited always, Jay, but we will be more express about it in the future. It would have been nice to have you because six people is a weird number.
Yeah, six people is an awful number to go to a board game convention with.
Yeah, kind of is.
Like if you had been our seventh.
Really? Eight is.
If you'd been our seventh, basically, Trevor and you and I would have traveled across the nation to play games together. Yeah, eight is ideal. Multiples of four.
Right, yeah.
Turns out for board games, you should have multiples of four.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, five is...
Three can be okay.
Three is okay.
Five is a rough number. There's quite a few games that play five, but there are...
Six is...
Almost no games that play six. Yeah, almost
right out. Right out, yeah. Unless you're a party gamer. So you and no judgment here, but we all know party gamers are not listening to this podcast.
That's right. So you could have to end up playing three.
Yeah, until you go to War Machine Weekend, and in the evening, Hitler is everywhere.
Yeah, it's Secret Hitler and Werewolf all night,
so,
every night.
Interesting note about Secret Hitler and Werewolf at Board Game Geek Con. There's a special section of the con area that's called Quiet Games, and there's these four rooms where you're supposed to be, you know, more quiet than normal.
Is this like where everyone who plays 18XX goes?
Yeah, this is the super cerebral games.
Yeah, super cerebral games, and it's supposed to be super quiet.
Like, there's a part of my soul that still wishes that I could have done, like, the deep dive into the 18XX games.
Oh, you would love it.
I know.
You would freaking love them.
So those four rooms where all those quiet games are played are right next door to the werewolf players. And I'm like, what the hell
were the planners thinking? 11 p.m. until probably dawn, there are people coming up and down the hall like, we're looking for werewolf players. And I'm like, hush, I'm trying to decide who to dedicate my cathedral to in antiquity.
Shh. So, we had that experience multiple nights.
Funny things happen. It's true.
So anyway, let's talk about some of the games we played and some opinions we have of them. Jay also played a new game.
A super hot new game.
Super hot.
Do you want to talk about yours first? Do you want us to dive into ours?
You guys can start with yours. I'm assuming you're going to have more than I
Kazillions.
Will. Yeah.
So the first game I want to talk about is called Dinosaur Island. It is made by Pandasaurus Games. It was one of the hot games at Board Game Geek Con.
How many people would you say are at BGG Con?
2,900 this weekend attended.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's one where, like, tickets sell out.
Instantly.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Trevor and I both got ours on the secondary market. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait list.
Neither of us got... I mean, we heard about it, like 2 hours after they were sold out.
Right? No, it's even worse than that. I was watching them. And, like, I think I mean, I'm in my office, obviously.
Right.
I think I take a phone call, turn back, that's done.
They're gone, yeah.
Yeah. It was like...
Huh. But anyway, so... Dinosaur Island is a... Just call it Jurassic Park, the board game.
That is 100% what it is.
It is. In fact, in the rules, the little DNA guy from the first movie that explains how dinosaurs are made, he's in the rules, even because I don't think he's...
That's not trademarked,
so he's in there. And the way the rules are explained is somewhat humorous, much like... In fact, the first player is designated by the last person to extract DNA from a mosquito in stuck in amber, which is obviously nobody. But anyway, it's a great game. It feels a lot like it's a worker placement game in many ways. Is that true?
Yeah, I guess it is. Yeah, you're right. Okay.
I mean, it's...
Because you send out your scientists to do things.
It's worker placement in some odd ways, because right. The scientists compete for worker placement locations that your opponents have, and then you have a worker placement session where you're placing workers on your own board where nobody else can take them
right,
from you.
That's right.
But anyway, you're building up a dinosaur park along with your opponents.
Storage of DNA.
Yeah, you're storing DNA to build new dinosaurs.
Which the DNA is on these freaking cool looking. They look like amber, right? Like amber dice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. The amber dice are rolled, and then you take turns selecting dice, basically, and other things. Anyway, it's about the same depth as, say, Puerto Rico or Power Grid. And I thought it was very well done. It's good. I feel like it was pretty well balanced.
It's colorful. It's got funny like pop culture references in there. Like my favorite, the restaurant that I built, and of course my park did not win, so let's not talk about that part. But the favorite restaurant that I built in my dinosaur park was Clever Grill.
Anyway, if you're a Jurassic Park fan, you should be looking for this game. It's a really good game to start with, and then it's well themed.
Will it come to retail? Like, because it was a Kickstarter.
It's a Pandasaurus game.
This is a tiny Jake mini rant.
Pandasaurus games upstairs.
But man, Kickstarter messes with my head. Like,
yeah, and I'd imagine at some point.
Okay.
I mean, they make Tammany Hall and Great Fire of London,
right? And all the you're other saying games. Those have all come and they're on the shelves here at Discount Games Inc.
Not all of those, but I mean, but I know Tammany Hall.
I've had both of those. I'm not sure if they're both in stock now, but
Tammany Hall is. That's a good game as well. That one's a few years ago, but yeah. Tammany Hall is a great game.
It's sort of funny, like the how quickly board games go from being the hotness to yesterday's Dreck.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I mean, that's a good example. Tammany Hall is a great game, but I bet you most of the people listening have never even heard of it.
The funny thing is, like, I was thinking about this as we were driving home. Like, there were a few moments this weekend where we were like fighting tooth and claw to get one of the hot new games out of the library there. I mean, okay. They have a huge library. And I was like, you know what? I could have probably marginally almost as much joy if I just moved a year behind and said to myself, let's try
these hot games hot
from a year ago.
Last year or the year before.
And I would never, no one would be competing with me because they'd be in the library, but they'd be considered direct. I mean, the truth is, one of the favorite games we played this weekend, for me, is an older game, really. Antiquity is how old? Maybe 4 years, maybe
13,
five?
It's 13 years.
It's that old. Anyway, and the reason, reprint. That's right.
The reason why it came back is because it was a very limited print run originally, and it was very, very hard to find. And so the Antiquity was selling for like $300 on eBay, and they've done a second print run, but they always did really, really limited print runs.
Small runs, okay.
And so it just barely came back in stock as a print run.
I've never heard of this game.
So this game, Jay, are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Imagine me playing this, okay? Talking about 18X Deep Dive for the record. Okay. This is 10,000 or 1,010 to 1,600 is the time setting.
Yeah.
Civ.
Okay.
You are building a city on a map and then from that city going out into a world map where you might build other cities. And basically you are scraping to survive every turn.
Like, yeah.
Hey, did I make enough food or will famine generate five new graveyards in my city?
Yeah, two of the core mechanics of the game are each round your cities produce pollution, and that pollution is placed in areas around your city, which basically ruin the resources you're trying to use to build the city. And then the other mechanic is famine, and you have to have so much food on hand to be able to feed the people in your city, and if you don't, it creates additional graves, which have to be placed in your city, which keep you from placing other buildings and things. And I will mention that one of the people, there was four people in the game. One person got eliminated because he couldn't build, because he didn't have any more wood to be able to get.
That idiot.
And then two other people got eliminated because their city got overtaken with graves.
And one person who's raising his hand over here managed to pull out of the tailspin just barely, and so was declared Lord of Antiquity by default, essentially.
The best part of the rules is where it says that it says that if a player's city gets completely filled with graves, they're knocked out of the game. And then in parentheses it says, but this is very rare.
It lies. Anyway, maybe
you guys just need to be better at gaming.
We'll have to play it again because
we obviously need to figure it out. I don't think it's as bad as we.
No, we made some awful choices.
Yeah, I mean, it was
everybody else did. Clearly, I didn't. Clearly, I didn't make awful choices.
Clearly,
I mean,
the guy that almost lost it all clearly made the right choice.
But again, my point is, there's an older game. It was readily available in the library, and like we wouldn't have to fight anybody for it. But we're just like the rest of human beings, and we're like,
You're like a raven.
I must behold the new shiny thing.
New shiny.
Yes.
So it's time to tell our little anecdote of the podcast. Josh's brother and father came with us, and his brother loves the Fallout series. I mean,
who doesn't? I mean, who, you know, unless you're soulless.
And Fantasy Flight is putting out a new game, a Fallout game, and it was available.
It comes out next week.
Does it? It's soon. Yeah, it's
coming soon. It's either this week or it's next week,
maybe a couple of weeks. Yeah.
Okay, so it's available soon. So I'm guessing there was only one, maybe two copies in the library?
I think there's only one.
Okay, so 100%. There's one copy in the library of Board Game Geek. And one guy seemed to have it for about 3 days. Like his brother was trying to get it all weekend long, and we would be sitting there and we'd see the guy kind of like, he'd like be parading it around, like showing it off to everyone about how how he had it. And his brother was basically, we sat outside the library all weekend long. Like he would just basically be running in there every 10 minutes to check.
We were basically spawn camping Fallout.
Okay. Yeah, to see whether or not he could get it. And he never found it, never got it. He actually approached the guy at one point and said, hey, you know, are you going to check that back in? And the guy said, I'm never going to check it back in. Complete dick to him, just like flat out rude to him. And he's just like, oh, okay. So his brother, Josh's brother, has to leave on Saturday.
A day earlier than Trevor.
Saturday morning to go to a wedding.
Yes.
Is that what it was? Yeah. A wedding. So he leaves. And Saturday night.
No. It was Friday night. He'd already left, and we knew Friday we were going to see him again.
Okay,
and yeah. And we get in the elevator, Trevor and I.
We get in the elevator, and we're standing there, and there's two other guys in there. One of them has the Fallout board game in hand. And we're like, hey, are you checking that in? He's like, well, actually, we just checked it out. We're going to play it right now. We're like, well, can we get in line? Can we check it out after you? You know, can you give us a call? He's like, well, you're actually second in line. This guy over here is ahead of you. So he's going to hand it to that guy after he was done. And so we're like, well, can you give us a call when you're done? He's like, yeah, sure.
Second dibs, please.
Yeah. So they play it that night, and then they hand it over to that guy that night, and he plays it until 4 in the morning. And so he calls us. What time did he call us? Like 9 or 10?
Yeah, I think it was about 10. Yeah, 9:30 or 10. Yeah.
So we pick up the game from him. And we take a picture of Josh's father playing the game. What game were we playing? I don't remember.
Near and Far.
And we put the Fallout board game just in the background.
Just casually behind him
so he can't see it. And we send it to his brother. How long did it take him to realize that the board game was in the background?
I mean, honestly, it took all of 30 seconds.
So then we continued taking pictures of like Fallout the board game playing in and playing far, near and far, and Fallout the board game playing Fallout the board game, Fallout the board game going to lunch.
We just trolled him the rest of the day. It was pretty glorious, honestly. I have a lot of GIFs of, you know, Anakin, angry Anakin, I hate you, you know, you were my brother, that kind of stuff coming back to me. It was good stuff.
So did you guys end up liking Fallout the board game?
Yeah, actually, it's pretty well done. It's fun. It's got, so to add to the weirdness, the one issue with it is you can win and not realize you've won, but maybe that's only if you're my dad. My dad basically won, and then we kept playing for an hour because he didn't know he had won. And then finally, I made a comment about the way you score, and he's like, oh, and he turns over the two cards that were basically winning points for him, and he's like, does this mean I won? I'm like, yes, an hour ago.
So there's usually in each scenario in Fallout, there's two different
factions.
Yeah. And there's a faction influence board where they're vying for influence or power. And you have secret agendas that you earn throughout
quests
the game.
Or purchases sometimes.
And each agenda on it says, you know, it's worth one victory point all by itself, the agenda is. And then in addition to that, it says, if you declare for one faction or the other, this card is worth a number of victory points equal to blah, 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 whatever happens
to
be.
Yeah, one faction being further ahead or like, you know.
Right. So you could have two different factions' agendas, and one could only be worth one victory point, and the other one could be worth five. But it's not worth five until you reveal it and say, I declare for whatever faction. So he had three agendas in hand. So he had three victory points at minimum, and we needed eight to win. And he had two of the ones for the faction that was
four points ahead.
Yeah. And so really all he had to do was just reveal and say, I'm going to declare for that faction. It's game over. I win. I there was a couple of interesting things about the game. I think that they've done a really good job of recreating.
They absolutely capture the Fallout atmosphere. Yeah,
right.
Because you got the funny like Pip-Boy graphics, and you know,
and the way that the leveling up works is really quite
cool,
and interesting. You gain XP and you move this little cog or peg, yeah, to the next letter in special for the letters and the attributes.
Yeah, the Fallout attributes. Yeah,
and so you move it to the next one that you've already leveled up. So if you start the game with two leveled up, let's say you have the P and the L, the first experience point would take you to P, the second experience point would take you to L, the third experience point would level you up, and so you'd gain another letter. So the next time through, you've got to get four experiences instead of three. And so as you play and gain letters, it takes you longer to level up. But the weapons are well done. I think that it's interesting. The best part about it, it's very much a Fantasy Flight
adventure.
Ameritrash game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's you know, but the you start with some adventure decks basically, and as you
make choices,
they shuffle new cards in to those decks. So plot lines get advanced, and as you complete certain ones, some of those cards leave the decks. So you have to continue following the adventure to be able to see those plot lines. And if it much like the Fallout game, if you don't follow the plot line, you'd get no agenda cards. You get you do not advance yourself towards winning. So
it's good.
If you follow side quests too much, you get lots of cool gear, but yeah, you don't
but
win.
No points.
I had fun even though I didn't even get close to it. I had no agenda cards at the end of the game. But I had the coolest weapon, hands down.
No argument. So yes, look for that one when it appears at Discount Games shelves.
Yes.
For sure.
I can go ahead and talk about, I've thought up of actually several games, so.
Oh, good.
I can chime in now with one.
Please do.
So this weekend, I started playing Pandemic Legacy Season 2. Previously, I had completed with the same play group, Pandemic Legacy Season 1. Pandemic Legacy Season 1 is, currently the number one rated game on Board Game Geek, and justifiably so, in my opinion. I think that it's a very well done made game.
So I have to ask you guys, I don't like Pandemic, the original Pandemic, and I've played it a few times, and I actually kind of enjoyed the Pandemic Cthulhu one.
Okay.
That one, I thought that one's a little more fun. But my question is,
your biggest complaint is still
the mechanic, the core mechanic.
No, I mean, his biggest issue is Trevor likes a cooperative game that has some sort of mechanic that mitigates a table captain or alpha gamer.
Or he likes to be with a group that's essentially all alpha gamers.
I wouldn't mind being with a group of all alpha gamers
that would say, no, it's my turn. This is what I'm doing.
Well, the group that I'm with are all smart board gamers, and it's not, none of us are like, it's my turn. It's more like we're all working together and contributing together on solving the problem. And there isn't, I mean, honestly, if there's someone who is more obtrusive than anyone else, it's me.
Yeah, I don't particularly care.
But also I could play with Trevor and we would be able to collaborate.
The
fine.
Only time I've ever felt bad about playing Pandemic, and it's happened a couple of times. It wasn't because I'm not feeling bad for me. I'm an alpha gamer. I'm the one that's crushing everyone else's spirits.
Right.
My problem is that when I see somebody at the table who clearly doesn't want to speak up or clearly is not involved in the game,
right.
I don't enjoy that. I don't.
Well, I think part of that is you need to change your perspective a little bit, because it's kind of the same way with role-playing games. I mean, there's a lot of people who go to role-playing games and they don't necessarily participate as much as some other players.
Sure.
But they still enjoy the role-playing game as much as anyone else because of...
They like hearing the story? I mean...
Yeah, I mean, they like hearing it. They like being a part of the experience. They like... They don't necessarily... They're more introverted. They don't necessarily want to be... You know, expending the energy on that.
Well, and my wife is that. You just described my wife.
Right, yeah.
So, like, if she were to play in a Pandemic Legacy game, she probably wouldn't say anything the whole time, and she would probably enjoy it. But I would have a hard time, I think, playing that game with her. Anyway, the question I was originally going to ask is what's the right number for Pandemic Legacy? Is
four.
It possible?
Oh, it's four. Yeah.
Is it possible to play it with two players?
No.
And I would...
Each of you are going to control two characters.
Yes, my advice is you would, which is fine, I mean, it would just be two players controlling two characters.
Yeah. I agree. That's the only way to do that, especially that game. More to the point also, I don't think that the legacy mechanic really fixes that issue of the non-participating player or the player getting overshadowed. I mean, the only way it can help is that there is a story being told and someone might end up feeling more ownership over their character as they, name the character games, and that character begins to develop and stuff. But
they get new abilities, they get scars, real quick, we've been talking about this without giving any type of explanation for it, but ages ago, it seems, was Pandemic the first cooperative game?
One of the first, had to have been one of the earliest. Yes,
I think.
Besides in our actual RPG,
what was the Asian themed one?
I think that came after
Really?
Ghost Stories.
Yes. Yeah, that was after Pandemic.
Was it really? Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, I think so. So, definitely one of the most prominent cooperative games to hit the market is Pandemic. And in Pandemic, the base game of Pandemic, you have
four diseases
mm-hmm. that are breaking out across the world. And your goal isn't to stop the get rid of all the disease. It's to find the cures for the four diseases.
Oh, how long it took me to learn that.
So with Pandemic Legacy, legacy games are... In Derek Zoolander terms, they're very hot right now. I'm assuming that, like,
justifiably so.
People at Board Game Geek were at Twitter with them.
I'm pretty sure two of the top five games for me this weekend are basically Legacy games.
Interestingly enough, Pandemic Legacy Season 2, I guess because it came out before the con, didn't seem like it was getting any buzz at the time.
Yeah, I can't remember. I think it was there in the library.
Some of it is that if you are... I don't know why you would play Pandemic Legacy at a game convention.
Yeah, unless you were going to play the whole
one-year cool.
game. Right, if you had brought your group with you. Like, I have considered doing that before.
Yeah, I would consider doing that. It's one of those things where, if you don't do it that way, you may never
finish. I basically need, the Wheeler Legacy Con, where you just come play Legacy games with me.
I find it interesting that it's taken Legacy so long to build up enough steam to become this popular. I mean, Risk Legacy is old.
And it's cool. Risk Legacy is really cool, but it's hard to...
Before we go more into the Legacy stuff, we've talked about Pandemic Legacy or Legacy games. They're games where, like on Pandemic Legacy, you are going to play 12 months. And if you play through a month and fail, then you will have a chance to play it again, the scenario again.
Right.
And then if you fail that, then you just advance on to the next month. And so max number of plays for the game is 24.
If you failed once every time? If you
failed every time on the first time.
Okay.
When I played Season 1... I think that we played 13 or 14 plays through.
You did not fail often.
Correct, yeah. And, there's one of the complaints a lot of people have so first off, what that means and what the legacy things mean is there's a storyline going on in the story, and you're making permanent marks on the stories. You're destroying cards. You're putting stickers on things. You're tearing up cards, and all these things are happening throughout the game. And so it does not have... replay value, and there's a lot of I in my 100 list of observations or opinions about things, one of them was that board gamers are cheapskates. At least some of them. A large swath.
The Pareto value of them are cheapskates.
And so it is kind of interesting that this is something that is a movement that's kind of happening in the board game community, even though there's segments of it that I hear that them
just come to my store
and they're this is the most outrageous
cash idea grab ever.
It would be interesting to sit down with those people and have an honest conversation with them and ask them how many games they've played where they've actually played the game 12 to 13 times
in digits.
I felt like the value I got out of Season 1 of Pandemic Legacy was phenomenal.
So I can't think of maybe out of all the board games I own, there might be two that I've
gotten played that many times.
More than 12 times out of.
The funny thing is, we were having this conversation before we turned the mics on. I own two copies of Pandemic Legacy Season 1
because
I started it with two different groups
yes.
and got about midway through with both groups, and then some members of the groups have gone on to college and have left my sphere of influence, and I haven't been able to.
So, you
but
need
I
the
still
con.
Feel like I got the value out of both of the pandemic legacies.
Sure, yeah,
honestly.
Yeah.
Even though I'm not even finished in a way,
right,
and may never finish.
Schedule your
faith.
Legacy
I have
games.
Faith in you. So it's Pandemic Legacy Season 1 was just a really cool experience. Before I cut you off, you were going to say something about legacy games?
Oh, I was just going to say, like Trevor was saying, I'm surprised it's taken them this long to catch on, you know? And your Cheapskate thing probably does have some part to do with that. But I also think they're hard to do. Like, I think they are also challenging to do well.
It's kind of, there's actually was like, the New York Times did an article on legacy games.
Okay.
And they're like, there's something like new and innovative that's happening in board games, and this like almost never happens. Like, there's everything's been done
turned on its head,
and it's basically like movies or whatever. Like, you can't think up of a new movie or idea or whatever,
right?
And so they're like, this is amazing, they've come up with a new board game concept, and talked about this was actually just before Seafall came out that they did the article. But I don't know. I do think that probably the development time is probably part of it.
Right.
It is lengthy, I'm sure, because, I mean, you're having to, you know.
Imagine playtesting that.
Jehoshaphat, please.
Yeah,
no.
I mean, it's a problem. So, you know, you need to have the right pacing and the right, and when does this rule come out, and when does this rule get added
and
to the rule book?
And the truth is, like, it may be that developers are now learning how to do it, you know, like how to balance it, like you're saying, Jay. Because as a matter of fact, you probably
there's more coming.
Yeah, they just announced Betrayal at House on the Hill Legacy,
right?
And I'm like, yes, please.
That could be pretty sweet.
I think so.
Yeah, I'm excited for it.
But yeah, so you know, it may be that our developers. I mean, it's such a tiny little community of human beings on the earth, you know. But like, they may be learning, like, okay, this is how I should balance this, or this is how I should. I mean, I just can't even imagine. Like, I'm an amateur author, right? Like, I've written a couple novels, and laying those out shattered my young mind. You know, this was like 15 years ago or whatever.
Well, to be fair, most legacy games have a kind of a path they're gonna force you down.
I think so.
There's not a complete, like, your choice.
It's not like RPG Sandbox where you're just
right.
Like,
your
no,
choice
we're not going
doesn't
to that
necessarily matter a ton. You're eventually going to hit these things in most
well,
situations.
Well, you're going to hit the plot points, but it's going to be, you know, is this city fallen? Is this character
correct?
Dead?
Yeah. And where does this particular plot point happen at on the map? I mean, for example, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's some pretty major things that happen in Risk Legacy that change the map dramatically.
Yes.
So, you know.
Deliciously.
Yeah. And so those sort of things, yeah, those are all. They don't have a predetermined location where they're going to happen. The plot points move along, but the story is different for everybody.
Right. So, Pandemic Legacy Season 1, it goes over, you know, you're trying to find the cure for this virus that is breaking out. My team, of course, crushed it. However, the Season 2 starts 71 years after that, and it starts with the, in the storyline, civilization's basically fallen.
So is it assuming failure of Season 1, then?
You failed in Season 1. And
your group like retcon it and be like, well, we didn't
fail. Bull crap.
Some other group failed a couple years later.
And basically there's these three havens that are floating maritime bases.
Okay. For humanity.
And they try to send out, stockpiles of supplies to, there's only a small amount of the map that you know of.
Okay.
And instead there's no cure. There's no treatment. And you have to, in pandemic, you can treat a disease and remove a disease cube from the box. In Season 2, it's reversed, and you're trying to get out supplies so that the supplies prevent a disease cube coming out.
Okay.
So if you, let's say that I have three cubes on Washington, D.C., and I draw a Washington, D.C. card, then it'll remove one of the supply cubes, and once it's zero, then it will put
a disease
on
an incurable disease.
Yeah. So
I Season 2 is like calls to me in so many ways, but I don't want to play it without playing Season 1.
I think that you could without.
Yeah, I told Trevor the same thing. I said, I think you should probably just.
I know, but it's a matter of. Yeah, I don't read
it's
book
the
two.
Completionist
right,
side.
Sure.
Of it. Yeah, I understand.
It is. I will also say that one thing that's good about the game is that it has some scalability on it to make it a little bit. Like, if you keep losing, mm-hmm. then you get more positive cards put into your deck.
Oh, sure, sure.
Okay. So it can scale the difficulty a little bit, but if you keep winning, then it is a very, very difficult game. So it's well designed in that it does kind of scale the complexity.
Oh, that's awesome. That's cool.
So what's your guys' next board game?
Well, am I just sort of going down the top five?
Let's continue the legacy love and talk about Gloomhaven.
Okay, that's the one I wanted to talk about. So it's actually the last game, really, that we ended up playing at the con. I went to check in whatever game we had Saturday night,
mm-hmm.
and just happened to see, like, I probably pushed a pregnant lady, honestly, because I saw Gloomhaven on top of the shelf, and I was like, I got to get in there, and, you know, so grabbed it, brought it out. And we set it up and read through the rules that evening, and I was just super impressed. And so we didn't really play the legacy part of it.
There was a scenario that was printed out.
Yeah, they printed out kind of a demo scenario.
Right, that doesn't have the legacy stuff in it.
So that you could learn it, but I was just like super impressed with this. It's basically a dungeon crawler.
Okay.
And I mean, but the system of actions is really cool because every character has a card of hands. You have a different hand type or, you know, a different hand of cards depending on what your
class
is, your race and class is. And everybody picks simultaneously two of those cards. One of them is going to determine your initiative and the other is going to provide a second ability.
And this one is cooperative, correct?
It's cooperative, yeah. And then yes, it is. I mean, I'm saying kind of because, like, it's cool because everybody gets dealt out at the start of each combat a combat goal that if they achieve will help advance their character. And everyone also has like a life goal for each of their characters that's
right. And when their character achieves their life goal, the character retires.
Oh my.
And new characters unlock.
No, I don't believe that's a fact. When your character retires.
So this
retires,
thing has like unlocking things happening.
It unlocks new character classes.
I assume you guys have no idea, but are like the new ones, like these new awesome.
Yes. I know enough about it to know that
something like a prestige class or something. Almost.
Yes,
probably.
Yes, that you're not going back you're not going back in power level or anything. You're advancing to the next character class, but your characters have a motivation, and when they complete that motivation, they're like, I have no reason to adventure anymore,
right?
And they go retire. Additionally, the legacy part of this is not just the characters,
right?
It's also the map.
So you're going to be stickering the map as you make decisions,
and the city.
The city's going to get better and have more things available as you bring loot back to it. I mean, it has
and this
some
is,
cool stuff going
this
on.
Is a game for point of reference. It is I think number 4 currently on Board Game Geek.
I would believe that.
Skyrocketed to 4. It went
it
very
is
quickly.
Ginormous.
And it one of the things that's interesting about it is that it had a Kickstarter and like a very small number went out to retailers, and like on secondary markets, it was immediately like having this huge price tag that skyrocketed.
Kind of thing, right?
Yeah. And now they did another Kickstarter, and that's making its way out to people. And they're also coming to retailers shortly. So you should be able to order yours from me.
It's also a steal. Like,
yeah.
I know.
Do yourself a favor and pick this thing up.
The price point is
$100.
It looks like it's expensive for a board game, but you are getting.
I mean, it's not Kingdom Death.
It's not Kingdom Death.
No, it's not.
As far as price point,
no,
no, but it is.
But it's huge. Yeah,
the box is huge, and it is beautiful and gorgeous, and the minis in it are great.
Yeah,
and the
Ukrainian artist does such a cool job on the art.
You're buying a $250 game for $100. It's huge. The box is huge,
and
these guys made fun of me when I complained about my lumbar as I picked the box up, but it was a legitimate complaint.
My understanding on it as well is that it's like, so for example, with Pandemic Legacy, I already said that I thought that it
was well worth the value.
Well worth the value.
Yeah.
Great return. I played it 13 or 14 times, whatever, and that was fantastic. My understanding of Gloomhaven is that if you dive into that,
honestly, get a lifetime of experience in that game. I'm being 100% sincere. Like, I think you could be a weekly gamer with that thing and be 5 to 6 years playing it. And it's going to expand easily too. That's the other thing. Like,
it's hard for us to judge just because we haven't done it. But I mean, I know that to start with, there's only four or five,
there's six, I believe,
six character starting classes available to you.
Yeah.
And we could see quite clearly that there were 20 character classes available. And it takes a while to unlock the character.
Right.
But there is lots of character classes you can unlock.
Yeah. There's gobs of story in that thing.
And I'll touch on this when I go to my next game,
mm-hmm.
but the thing that's interesting to me is how this is kind of like, I don't know, it feels like there's an element of board games that are marrying themselves with role-playing games.
Yes, right.
And this could almost be like your weekly role-playing group.
It absolutely could.
It's even better than that.
And it does such a good job because you don't have to have a GM.
GM doesn't have to. There's one that has to do like the study work.
I had a friend who was like, oh, I really want to do some role-playing. I'm like, man, that'd be really fun. But then I was like, oh, but then I would have to like
GM it
and spend hours a week.
Right. Yeah. I told Trevor, like, so I've GM'd a group for my 15-year-old, right?
Right.
Which then fell apart because of interpersonal drama. But
shocker.
She's trying to put together a new group, right? And I'm like, man, it would be so awesome to, I'll just get a second copy of Gloomhaven just to play with this group of, daughter and her friends. And then because I wouldn't have to GM at that point.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, but, yeah. Not that GMing is bad. Like some people love it, and I actually enjoy it when I get to it. But I'm like, oh, this system,
I enjoy it too. But it's just
so well done.
If you're going to do a weekly role playing group,
mm-hmm.
it's a
lot of work.
It's a lot of work. Time
commitment. Yeah. Yeah.
So one of the interesting mechanics with Gloomhaven is you have this hand of cards, and you start with all your cards available to you. And each turn you play two, you get a top action, a bottom action, and the initiative.
The initiative, right?
That Josh was talking about. Well, as you discard these cards, the way you get the cards back into your hand is either taking a long rest or a short rest. The long rest lets you pick which card out of the discard pile you toss, and you get to bring all the others back to your hand. The short rest, and that takes a whole turn.
Right.
The short rest, you get all the cards back to your hand, but one gets removed randomly from the discard pile, so you don't get to pick what you lose. Well, over the course of a game, over the course of an encounter, your hand size gets smaller and smaller. In addition to that, some abilities, as they're used, get permanently removed from your hand. So your hand size is getting smaller and smaller. Well, eventually you run out of cards. And when you run out of cards, your character is completely exhausted. They collapse. And we went into our second scenario thinking, oh, yeah, we got this. This is no problem. And we went kind of slow, you know, methodically moving our way through. And before long, we realized, we're not going to make it.
We basically kicked down the boss's door, and we were like, oh, just give me a minute here. I only got a couple cards left.
Can you die for us with just two cards left in our hand?
Turns out, no, he couldn't.
So you have to be very careful.
You have to monitor your pacing.
Yeah, because the cards that you used and are discarded, permanently removed, lost is the term, they're very powerful. So if you're like, we're just going to kick the crap out of everybody, and you just go full on, and you start using all those abilities, you can run out of cards super fast. So
yeah. Anyway, super well done. Like Trevor said, it's a steal. Pick it up as soon as Jay gets it.
And I'm excited. I think that as soon as I finish season two of Pandemic Legacy,
that's what you're moving on to
the next, or I should have Gloomhaven by that point and can.
I'm almost jealous of you. The only reason I'm not jealous is because I do have a good Seafall group going right now, so I'm getting my Legacy.
I've heard the
juices.
I've heard, bad review of that.
Yeah, here's my impression. People who are like gamers, like which most of us are, who are gaming to win, are not going to enjoy that game.
If all you're doing is trying to win each round, you're gonna. I think that there's the catch-up mechanics are not strong enough.
Yeah, the group that I've that Trevor and I have that is playing it is having a great time with the legacy and story elements, you know.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, I think if you don't read the entries, you don't read the cards, and all you're doing is playing a board game, it's not a well-balanced board game,
right,
probably.
That's exactly right. So,
but if you're enjoying the
experience, if you're there to tell the story together,
if you're there to tell a story.
Absolutely. Yeah. Were we three games into it, I think?
Yeah, we're three games in, but I think that some of the complaints also come from people farther in than we are. So.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So check back next year.
Real quick, I'll do another... talk about another board game
okay. That
is kind of related to Gloomhaven. So one Michael Plummer recommended this game to me. He used to work for Privateer Press,
mm-hmm.
and now Hungerford says that he has a job at the blow game, at the blowjob factory, which is Valve. I thought that was amusing. But anyway.
This is good.
Plummer said I needed to try out a game, and he said that it was his favorite game, full stop.
Okay.
So I tried it out. It's the Arkham Horror card game.
Oh.
Have you tried this stuff?
I have played two or three scenarios of it, yeah, with my brother and dad. And yeah, it's pretty delightful.
It's really well done. The reason why I said it was kind of related to
Legacy.
Gloomhaven. Is that it really feels to me like it is a combination of board game, role-playing game, and deck building game.
Mm-hmm.
You start out and you set up your scenario, and it's a lot like a role-playing scenario. You're going to be making decisions. As you do things, you're going to have objectives. And there's a timer of like bad things that are happening. And if you don't complete the good things you're wanting to accomplish before that timer happens, then you'll see what the result is. And they've done a good job of having it themed with Cthulhu stuff, where like even if you're doing everything right, you're like still getting the
you're
shit
still
kicked
losing
out of
your
you.
Mind.
Yeah, you're, yeah. And it's just very well done. The story is cool. The mechanics are cool. The deck building stuff is fun. They also have a really cool mechanic, in my opinion, where they have this every time you do a skill check. Basically, you draw a token out of the cup,
mm-hmm.
and the cup. When you draw it out, it has a modifier on it to your skill check. And so instead of doing like a dice or whatever, they use that as the random number generator. The thing that's cool about it is that you can pick different difficulty settings for the game. And as you
change the bag, right?
Right. And it changes the bag basically so yeah. that you'll have more difficult modifiers in the bag as you decide to increase the difficulty. And even just like the normal setting is a fucking kick in the nuts.
Clearly hates you and wants you to perish.
Yeah, I mean, anyone increasing that, like, bravo, sir.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, so
it's an LCG and also kind of living as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So my brother's played all the scenarios today, and he freaking loves it.
Nice.
And yeah, I would play it more probably if I just had the right group. But okay, so I'm going to give a quick recommend that's totally different flavor. In case you're out there Christmas shopping for children, so Haba Games, HABA, always have fantastic children's games. We played two of them this weekend, and the best was one called Rhino Hero Super Battle. And it is basically you're building a literal house of cards, but it's like a skyscraper of cards, an entire city of skyscrapers of cards, and moving little superhero meeples on all over this thing, and you're trying to be the highest one in the city, and eventually it crashes and it's hilarious. And yes, I made it fall down, thank you. But that one's pretty brand new, I think.
Who won that one? who was it?
Not me.
No.
I can remember is not me. Fine, it was Trevor.
So each turn you take a card and you play the card, and on it it has two symbols, or maybe only one symbol.
Yeah, yeah, of tall walls or short walls.
Yeah, and so then you grab a tall wall or a short wall or both or two short walls or whatever, and then you line those up and you play. You add to the skyscraper building, and then you roll a die that has from -1 to +3 yep. on it, and that's how many floors up or down you move. And the goal is to have your hero the highest when the whole thing collapses. So if you can set it up so that you're the highest, and then set it up so that your next person is
right.
going
so
to
probably
collapse.
Right, so it's unsteady enough that it'll fall.
Right, that you win. And it's an interesting game. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I don't know that my kids would... Maybe it's,
rock it.
Yeah, maybe it needs to be just a little bit older. I think our two middle kids would understand it, but my youngest would just like... He would just want it to fall over.
Right.
Which I guess is okay, too, so...
Okay. Do we have another
sure.
game to discuss?
I'll throw one.
Trevor, do you have a quick recommend?
Yeah, I do. I'm going to recommend Nemo's War.
Oh, nice.
So Nemo's War was also kickstarted, but I think you'll be able to probably buy it in stores eventually.
It's currently being distributed by Victory Point Games. Which,
yes.
Does that mean that it doesn't show up at your friendly local game stores very easily?
Not very easily.
Okay.
You have to have an account set up with them, which is
They only do direct to store, basically.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Well, then I apologize.
And it's their, I think, like their top-selling.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Game.
I apologize to those of you who have to go out and find it, but.
Yeah, they also are the people who distribute Chris Cluey's game.
Twilight of the Gods. Yeah. Okay.
Anyways. Okay, so you're going to have it then?
Because you have Twilight of the Gods.
You're going to have Nemo's War? Okay.
Well, you should.
Okay.
Well, so Nemo's War is, at its core, it's a single-player game. And I know that sounds weird for a board game. I've played several single-player board games in the past, and I think that they provide a unique experience. If you like board games and you like them more for the cerebral thought process of how do I go at this, you technically can't really lose Nemo's War per se. But
that's not true. You were inconsequential.
That wasn't
that
a loss.
That sounds illusory to me.
Anyway, you score points, and your points, you look at a chart basically and see where how well you did, but it has plenty of replay value, so you can play it multiple times. Yeah. But in Nemo's War, you play the Captain Nemo of the Nautilus. It's set in the book basically. So you have some tasks that you can do, but depending on your motivation for Nemo, and there are four different motivations you can select. One of them is exploring. One of them is science. One of them is military, and one of them is anti-imperialism. If you select those, the different motivations, it changes your actions, basically.
Ways to win points,
yeah. And each turn, you're going to draw an event card, and you're going to have to try to accomplish it. And it's based on the core mechanic of it is very War Machine-esque. You roll 2d6 versus a target number, and you can boost, essentially, by potentially sacrificing Nemo, the ship, or the crew. And if you fail, expend that resource, the crew, you lose crew, you lose Nemo's sanity, essentially, or you lose part of your hull gets damaged. And if you succeed, you keep them. So it is up to you to decide whether or not that resource is worth risking. And you have to manage. You also have crew members that give you once per game bonuses. And if you don't use them for the whole game, they're worth points at the end.
Never even thought. They're basically feats, though. They're all mini feats.
Yeah, they're all mini feats. some of them give you bonuses to the die roll after you roll. So in that one time when you roll the double ones or whatever, but you've already sacrificed Nemo and your crew and the hull because it was a really important roll and you're one off even though you rolled double ones and you put everything in it. You can still sacrifice the crew member to get over that hump. You also upgrade the Nautilus, and you travel around the many seas, and you sink ships by ramming them. And just depending on what your motivation is, determines how many points you get. And it's a very engaging game. There's plenty of flavor text to tell a story about about the Nemo career that you're developing.
The art is like super evocative. Like it feels
of
like
the theme. Yeah.
Yeah. That era art, and like, it's very cool.
Yeah. And you have to keep your notoriety down so that the militaries of the world don't come out and actively hunt you. If your notoriety gets too high, they come and find you and kill you. And they're still hunting for you as you go throughout the game. It gets worse as your notoriety gets higher.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a great game. If you've ever played a solo game before or want to try one, this is a great entry point into solo games. So,
my biggest issue with those is that usually I'm like, why am I not playing a computer game if I'm doing a solo game?
I had that same conversation with Trevor. I did think about that.
I think
there's something tact. There's something. There really is something about holding the dice and pulling the tokens yourself.
It's also. I agree. There's probably some. Josh asked me why you wouldn't take it to a computer. Why not make it a computer game? And I don't think that Nemo's War would make a good computer game. It might make a good mobile game. Like I think you could play it on an iPad or a phone, and it might be okay. It would actually be pretty good,
right?
But there's certainly something about drawing a new ship from the bag to see which one is hunting you now.
I mean, really, Jay, it's because you've got to be prepared for the apocalypse that your group brought about by failing Pandemic Season 1. So, and you're not going to have power.
I'm not sure if you're aware of this, Josh, but I have zero interest in living in a post-apocalyptic society.
Well, you could get into Disneyland every day for no price.
Have you seen the abandoned theme park pictures?
Oh, I have. They're like from like Russia and those kind of places, yeah, right?
They're fucking terrifying.
They are crazy. Yeah, that's a fair point.
I will have you know that my desktop screensaver at home is just pictures, thousands of pictures of abandoned things. I love it. Love it. I love pictures of abandoned.
So much.
Yeah, it's true.
I love pictures of abandoned theme parks and abandoned houses. And there are YouTube videos of people entering abandoned houses and just recording all of it. And there are some just amazing, amazing abandoned houses that people take just glorious videos of. There's one in Europe that has been abandoned for like 30 years, and it's a huge mansion that they go in and explore, and it's just, wow. It's awesome. I want to do it. We live in a part of the world where abandoned things don't really...
Well, that's because nothing is that old here.
There's a few abandoned things.
They get torn down.
But they get torn down. Yeah. They don't stay usually.
Right.
So.
One other quick recommendation. I've been playing a fair bit of Legend of the Five Rings locally. The most common comment when I've been like, hey, you want to try this out or whatever, they're like, it's another LCG game.
Right, right.
And I don't know how this is locally or for other people, but kind of a common trend locally is that an LCG will hit and it'll take off and people will be excited, and then it just like peters out after that.
Yep.
And so had kind of a hostile audience, but the game's good enough that like I play it with people and they're like, okay, I'm going to buy. So
would you say that like, even were it to never receive, you know, expansions or support, it's good enough to just stand on its own? Is that kind of your feeling?
Josh, the core is there games, any game that could do that?
Oh. Wow.
LCG. Is there any LCG that could do that?
Oh, any LCG? I mean, for me, yes, because I can't keep up with the pace.
Right, yeah.
But your point is well made.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at like the net decks for some of the
clans,
it's like, oh, and then I put in basically almost every available card.
Oh, right. So. And I presume not all the clans are released yet.
I'm assuming they're going to come out with some later, yeah, like Mantis or whatever. Yeah.
Okay.
But the core mechanics of the game are very solid, and it's very interesting in my opinion. So
my final recommend, and I could have many more, obviously, but this is to tide you over until Gloomhaven gets here and you buy it from Jay, is Near and Far, which is like kind of a putting your toe in the water of Legacy games, I feel like. Because it is a game where you are venturing on a map and you know, getting with this little party of super cool illustrated characters, and you're reading stories and basically playing choose your own adventure when you go on quests. And it has a campaign mode that your character will change. And so it's sort of Legacy light in a way, but it's funny because we played that we played that right before Fallout, but the day we played Fallout, it was like Near and Far, Fallout, Gloomhaven. It was all adventure games all the day. And it was probably my favorite day. So infer from that what you will.
All right. Well, I'm gonna close out with a little bit lighter game.
Was it our most played game of the con?
Yes. it's a game called Paper Tales. We played it four times throughout the weekend. It's a real quick drafting mechanic game. I would call it a Seven Wonders Light.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, it doesn't have the same theme or anything, but you pick a card.
Super cool paper cut art.
Yeah, you take a card and you pass cards to the left, take a card, pass cards to the left or right or whatever. And then after the drafting is done, you pick four or five of the cards you drafted potentially, and you pay for them and you flip them over. And then you compare strength of front lines versus your adjoining kingdoms, basically, the ones next on your left and your right, and you see whether or not you beat them. And if you did, you get 3 victory points for each war you win. And the creatures or people that are in the deck are things like, you know,
dragons, Cerberus, krakens, manticores,
and there's like just regular
peddlers,
farm workers and stuff that earn you resources, and those resources are on the cards, and just like in Seven Wonders, and you can use those resources to start building buildings,
improving the town,
and those buildings help you out, and you earn money each turn, and the money can be spent to again buy more powerful cards. And I think that it's a quick play. It's very easy to somebody who might like Seven Wonders, but it might be a little bit much. This is a good entry point. It's a great game that you can just pack around and say, let's play this real quick.
Yeah.
Like I said, we played it 4 times throughout the weekend. I don't think we ever had
it. It was kind of our palate cleanser.
Yeah. I mean, the whole game takes about 15 minutes?
20, yeah.
Yeah, 20, 15, 20, 20 minutes. 30 minutes. There's only four rounds of drafting, so it doesn't take that long.
Right.
Once we learned it, I mean, you could play a game really quick.
Yep.
So
look for that one, too.
That one might already be out. I don't even know.
I don't know.
I already said my last one.
I know. That was technically Trevor's closeout. I guess, do you want a dad joke?
I guess.
Because here's what I said to my dad when we were playing Antiquity and his town filled up with graveyards. I said, hey, that graveyard looks overcrowded. People must be dying to get in there.
You know, it was only funny until it happened to me.
Trevor, do you have anything?
Sure. I have a top five. Do we want to do a top five this week since we didn't talk any War Machine stuff? All right. Well, let me pull it up. Maybe Josh can talk about a board game while I'm finding it.
So we played the new Civilization also, the new Civilization board game. It is very light in terms of a Civilization game.
Yeah, I think you could play it in an hour and a half.
It's a good game. It's fun. I enjoyed it. But Trevor and I were talking about it. It almost feels like it has started to stray away from its core theme of building a civilization.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun. It's a
really fast pace. Like, your turn is like
good game. In fact, if it let me say this,
if it had any other skin,
if it hadn't said Civilization on the box cover, Sid Meier's Civilization, if it had said something else, like, I don't know,
Tom's Space Galaxy Builder,
even it could even be the same theme and the cards could look identical,
right?
But it wasn't selling to me as Civ,
right?
I probably would have loved it. In fact, it was pretty good. It just, it's not quite Civ. I think the old Civilization game is better.
It's very streamlined.
Yeah, it's very streamlined. Extremely streamlined.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, we were sitting there and a guy walked by and he's like, I love that game. It's so awesome. It's way better than the previous Civ. Like, it only takes about an hour to play it. And when he said that, I was like, wait a minute. Oh, you just ruined
it. You're going the wrong direction. Yeah. We just finished a 5-hour game of Antiquity.
So anyway. All right. We are to our last top five provided by Mark Quagula, which I'm sure that I will have five more available to me after he hears that.
Please.
So this is the top five Kadorian motivational slogans. Number five, there's no substitute for hard armor. Number four, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Believe in Covenant Joe. Number three, measure the size of your accomplishments by the warjacks you blew up to reach your goals. Number two, obstacles are things you see when you take your eyes off crushing the enemies of the Empire. And number one, the only person you need to be better than is all of the Signar scum. My favorite.
Excellent. Well, next week we will actually have War Machine content, so look forward to that.
And I do.
Excellent. Well, on that note, we'd like to thank everyone for listening to another episode of
Chain Attack.